And yet the soul who is thus constantly forced to change his position cannot perceive the actions of time. So here, the very interesting part of this verse is that previously, a couple of verses ago, the Abhidhuta Brahmana was giving the example of fire as one of the 28 different gurus, and then proceeded forward to give another example of the moon as one of the 28 gurus, and then has gone back to the example of the fire again. So this is actually the only time really that he does that. But obviously he felt it was necessary that just in case something was overlooked, which he felt that there was, then he is backtracked. It's called, this analytical method is called Simhara Lokana, for the lion's glance. You can imagine a lion there moving forward stealthily, seeing great distance of the head and understanding perfectly what is presently there, not making a sound, and yet they have a goal in the far distance, and at the same time glancing backwards to see if there's anything that they have missed or neglected. So actually, in order to understand any of these verses in this particular with this Abhidhuta Brahmana, it's very important that we actually use that method of Simhavalokana, because here the underlying message in the form that's being given by the guru in the form of fire is detachment, learning detachment. All of these verses, there's a word here, atmana, related to the spirit soul. The Abhidhuta Brahmana is seeing within nature, within the material world, examples that help to illuminate the qualities of the spirit soul. So the qualities of the spirit soul are very subtle, very hard to understand, and sometimes when we see an example of those qualities within nature, it makes it a lot more easy to comprehend, to fully assimilate at the very subtle point. Just like we see Srila Prabhupada would always give various examples in order to illustrate a difficult philosophical concept. So here the sage, the Abhidhuta Brahmana, is giving learning about detachment by seeing within the flame in America they have a saying, what's called the Boston Shuffle, which I don't know if you've ever heard that, where you get a deck of cards and you shuffle the cards, but you don't want people to see what you're actually doing. You're sort of you're hiding some cards or putting cards in. So as you're shuffling the deck, there's something that you do that people look that way and not what you've just done with the cards. It's called the Boston Shuffle. You look that way, we go this way. Okay. So here this Abhidhuta Brahmana is pointing out how Maya works with the Boston Shuffle. It's, that even though we look at things, we don't see what's actually happening. We see something else because Maya has made us look in a different direction. So this very nice example here with the flames of the fire, that we look at the flame and generally we just see the constant flame. We don't see that actually what is actually happening is there is a constant process of destruction, creation, destruction, creation. So we miss that. And it is the very nature of the material. Everything, not just within the flame, but everything within the material universe, including the material universe itself, has a set time frame where it is created and destroyed. So generally, we don't see that. We don't see, when we look at things, we don't see a constant process of creation and destruction. We just tend to look at things as constant flow. This is my life. This is my identity. This is my house. This is my, you know, like this. We forget over many, many, many lifetimes that these material bodies are constantly being created and destroyed. We forget that. We miss that. Because our attention is diverted somewhere else, and therefore we completely miss the real point. So that's how the material energy works. It's very, very tricky. Very tricky. Which is a very important lesson to take. Especially with this chapter here, because as we know, the beginning of this chapter, Krishna spoke to Uddhava, and his all of these instructions of the Avadhuta Brahmana fall within the category of Krishna explaining to Uddhava that you can be your own guru. The living entity can be their own guru. So this is coming from Krishna, of course, that therefore has to be understood very carefully, because we have to understand that in conjunction with the fact that Maya is very tricky. Right? Which is another instruction given here. So the idea, of course, if we do look beyond the trick of Maya, and we see that everything in this world is constantly being created and destroyed, it gives us a sense of detachment, because we realise, oh, there's nothing really in this material world to get attached to, because everything, material body, including the universe, everything is being destroyed. Don't become attached to anything, because that's just the way of this world. If one sees that, sees beyond the trick, and sees that, one becomes detached. So that's the lesson. This entire section of the Bhagavatam, the entire 11th canto, deals with the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. And in the very beginning of that narration, it is described that if one hears the destruction of the Yadu dynasty, it will develop an impetus to become detached from the material world. So there's a move throughout the entire Bhagavatam. Because even the Lord's own great dynasty is wound up, no matter how powerful something may be. By the will of the Lord, everything within this world comes to an end within the material existence, and therefore a mood of detachment is naturally developed. So these chapters here describe how one can use one's intelligence, perceive the nature, the very subtle qualities of the soul by examples within nature who act as one's guru, and in that way one's using one's own intelligence as one's guru. In the next chapters, from 10 right through to 29, it actually describes how one can come to this platform. So, which is a very interesting point. You see in the beginning of chapter 10, after all the Avadhuta's instructions, it describes in those verses how one comes to that platform. In other words, not everyone is qualified even to do this, to act as, use one's intelligence, to act as one's own guru. So that's a very important point there as well. it's not that we simply take that instruction from Krishna, that one can use one's own intelligence, act as one's guru, as an all-in-all statement. Because one has to qualify even to be able to do that. And to qualify, there are many preceding preliminary processes and purificatory activities. And also, the statement has to be taken in context with all of the previous statements in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam as well, because Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, is Krishna's non-different from Sri Krishna. It's described that when Lord Sri Krishna, in his personal form, went back to the spiritual world, that he remained here in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is all perfect. It is non-different from Sri Krishna. It is not a hodgepodge of mixed-up instructions, and you just sort of take the bit that sort of works for you. It's not like that. It is, you know, it is non-different from Krishna, and it is completely perfect and completely consistent from verse 1 right through to the end verse. And therefore, all the verses need to be taken into account by understanding what comes before, using the lion's glance, as we said, looking back while proceeding forward. So, again, if we have a look at some of the verses that were that describe that using one's intelligence to act as one's own guru is not a completely independent process. It is done in conjunction with faith in the Vedas, faith in the spiritual master, faith in the association of devotees, and faith in the process of bhakti yoga, or those levels of yoga that lead to bhakti yoga. So to confirm that, we'll have a look at some of these verses here. So in verses 2 to 6, Narada Muni was giving instruction to Vyasadeva, and to do that he recalled a conversation between Maharaj Nimin and the nine yogendras. So we see first in the third chapter, text number 36. In the 11th canto, chapter 3, text number 36, it describes how one cannot actually approach the absolute truth by the material mind. The faculties of the material speech, sight, and intelligence. He says here, neither the mind nor the faculties of speech, sight, intelligence, the life air, or any of these senses are capable of penetrating that supreme truth any more than small sparks can affect the original fire from which they are generated. Again, in the very chapter we're reading, 11.7.23, there's this term here that Krishna is described as agriyam anumanantaha, that he is beyond the grasp of direct perception by the process of logical deduction. In text chapter 2, text number 42 and 43 describes how it is actually the process of bhakti which leads to detachment, is that verse. Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things. These three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the same way that pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly each bite for a person engaged in eating. So there he's describing that after understanding we can't approach the absolute truth, the absolute platform by our material mind and senses, but it can be approached through bhakti. Again, in verses 21 to 28, there's that very famous verse that one must approach this bona fide spiritual master. And then there are many instructions that one must take association of devotees, learn the process of bhakti under the guidance of the spiritual master, associate with other devotees who are on the path of bhakti, have faith in the shastra, and there are many other injunctions there which are learned under the bona fide spiritual master who is fully realised in the shastras. Then in verse number 29 it describes that there are different types of gurus, the Kanishtha, the Madhyam and the Ujjama, but amongst them one is especially recommended to approach the highest guru, which is another very important point, that although the mind can act as one's guru to a certain point, but if the opportunity is there to approach the highest guru, the Ujjama Adhikarik, that has been recommended. It is never stated within the Srimad Bhagavatam that one should reject very, very elevated Vaishnava guru and simply accept one's own mind as one's guru. In text number 30, again, it describes that by practicing these processes in the association of devotees, so not just independently, just listening to one's mind, but in the association of the Vaishnavas, one can actually achieve the perfect results of bhakti. In text number 40 of the third chapter describes that then, by this process, one will actually perceive the Self and the Supreme Lord. In the very famous verse in the fifth chapter, text number 32, it describes there that intelligent persons in the age of Kali, they particularly take the method of bhakti, which is predominant with the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord, and that of all processes, that is the easiest. In fact, Uddhava, so in this chapter, because Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, and in the sixth chapter, Uddhava points out that he says to Krishna that there are many persons who take to the path of renunciation and they undergo great difficulty to attain Brahman. You know, they cannot go higher than that, but you know, a lot of difficulty, a very painful, very difficult process over many, many lifetimes. But he says to Krishna, but devotees, we just simply accept your prasadam. That is our process. We chant your holy names, we chant your glories, we accept your prasadam, and by this method, we very, very easily attain the highest transcendental result. So therefore, we see there's a whole string of verses there, which certainly cannot be forgotten and need to be kept firmly in mind in order to place Krishna's instruction in this chapter in its proper context. So yes, one can use one's own mind as a guru to guide one, but that is a limited process. And Krishna never described it as the only process, or as all in all, or as a completely independent process from accepting the bona fide guru, faith in the shastra, accepting the process of bhakti, etc. Understand that point? So, also, it's interesting that in the beginning of this seventh chapter, Uddhava surrenders to Krishna. And at the very end of all these instructions, which are ultimately coming from Krishna to Uddhava in chapter 29, Uddhava again surrenders to Krishna. So we don't see that Uddhava takes that instruction of Krishna that the jiva can be their own guru and says, yes, I surrender to myself. So he has placed that instruction in its proper perspective. That in the same way, the hand can act as the hand in relationship with the body. And then you can do so many things independently with it, a little bit of independence, but in relationship with the body. When the hand is detached from the body, its function cannot be executed. Similarly, our mind can act as a guru when we are under the guidance of the bona fide first class spiritual master, receiving instructions coming in the line through Krishna. We are following a bona fide process which is based upon the Vedas. Then our mind can act as guru. Independently of that, our mind actually loses that ability to act as guru. And there's a point there. So, again, a very interesting thing here is that not only does Uddhava not say that he's a guru, in text number 16 he actually says, I'm a fool. Oh my lord, so this is in the 7th chapter again, text 16. Oh my lord, I myself am most foolish, because my consciousness is merged in material body and bodily relations, which are all manufactured by your illusory energy. So the conclusion there is that Krishna's instruction that one's mind can act as one's guru means that even if one has never associated with a guru, so one may have never had the opportunity to take instructions from the bona fide guru, but what he is saying is that, and this is also confirmed in different Vedic verses, is that the spirit soul is complete in itself, has the full capacity to see the difference between matter and spirit with one's intelligence. Even though one may not have accepted instructions from the bona fide guru, one may have never met a guru, but the spirit soul does have that capacity to see the nature of the material world. If one can see beyond the tricks, if one can see beyond the Boston Shuffle, and see what's actually happening, how there's this constant process of creation and destruction, naturally one will become detached from material existence. And one will also be able to perceive qualities which are very similar to one's own spiritual existence. In this way, gradually one can perceive one's spiritual nature, and one can perceive the temporary, limited nature of the material existence. So that is definitely there. And one who uses their intelligence, like a guru, to lead them in that direction, naturally they will come to the point where they begin to appreciate the necessity for taking shelter of a very advanced, spiritually situated person who can give them full instructions in the understanding that they have managed to gain. To take that realization to its full realization. They will appreciate also the association of similarly minded souls who think in the same way. But when we think about it, of course, there is no way that by one's own intelligence, even if one is very, very intelligent, how can one perceive within nature, all the pastimes of Krishna that happen in the 10th canto? Where do we see that? We're looking in the fire. we can get a few little glimpses of the nature of the spirit soul and its qualities and the nature of the material world. how will you see within, you know, the examples of nature that, you know, Krishna went to Indraloka and took the parrot out the tree for Satyabhama because she was jealous that Rukmini had one without a guru. How will we understand even Krishna's name is transcendental without a guru? How do we even know what Krishna's name is? How will we know what Krishna's form is? How will we know what Krishna's qualities are? We see in the Nectar Devotion a list of all the different principal qualities of Krishna. How would we know? How would we understand them without a guru? So, how would we know that in this particular age that we're living in, Kali Yuga, there's a specific process given by particular expansion, or not expansion, but the Lord Himself in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Sankirtan movement? How would we know? So, generally we see that, for instance, if we become ill, we know that we with our intelligence, we can understand there is some illness. We may have some ability to try and ward off that illness until we can get professional help. But we can't, you know, just be a doctor, a surgeon, or what have you. You know, we have some ability, some limited ability to do what we can, but we don't know the full prescription of treatment. And that, of course, is given by the guru. So in this age of Kali, that prescription is Sankirtan. So, another very interesting point about this, of course, is that we're talking about, Krishna is saying that the living entity has the ability to use their intelligence to act as a guru. Now, how much that applies in Kali Yuga is another thing. Krishna is saying this to Uddhava 5,000 years ago. Even then, Uddhava is considering that I am a fool. When we think about it, this whatever intelligence we have, we still have to consider that for millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of lifetimes and millions of births, we've been fooled by the material energy. So yes, we may have, you know, gathered a little intelligence in this lifetime, but ultimately, as way back as we can go, we've been fooled, completely enamored by the tricks of Maya. And it is highly likely in Kali Yuga that again we will be fooled and tricked by material energy. So, you know, the process given there by Krishna certainly has to be taken into consideration. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he actually said the same thing that Uddhava said. He said that my spiritual master, he said to me that you're fool number one. Which is a very interesting, because we know that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually a very great scholar. He had, at the age of 16, there was that great pundit, Keshava Kashmir, and he was renowned to be the greatest scholar of Sanskrit and logic and throughout India. And when he came to Navadvip, he was this young boy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimai Pandit, who soundly defeated him. Yeah. So he was obviously very, very intelligent, great scholar. But he is saying that I'm a fool. Now the lesson there, of course, is that when the guru says you're a fool, then you're a fool. And actually, the disciple their aspiration is to always remain a fool before the Guru. They always want to be in the position where they're very eager to be chastised by the Guru. I am a fool, you chastise me. I am a fool, you correct me. I am a fool, you give me instruction. The disciple never wants to be in the position that now I have become so advanced spiritually that I can neglect the instructions of the spiritual master. And one who thinks like that is actually the greatest fool. So this is the lesson. Actually, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in this example, he's actually teaching us that there is no material qualification which will give you spiritual advancement or, you know, advancement in the process of bhakti yoga. The real qualification to advance as a devotee is to have firm faith and humility to accept the instructions of the bona fide spiritual master. To be very eager to serve the spiritual master, to be very eager to serve Krishna, to, you know, take their orders as all in all, the Shabdasadha, Bhagavad Prasadha. That is the real qualification. It's not that one cannot use, you know, develop philosophical and logical abilities, but it's not that one should not study Vedanta, it's not that one should not try to, you know, develop detachment and knowledge, but all these things must be done in conjunction with the order of the spiritual master to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. In that way, one remains a fool. We see in our movement there are many, many great scholars who write so many wonderful books, you know, on Vaishnava philosophy. Why they have that ability? Because they're all fools before the spiritual master. Because they are able to always meditate upon Srila Prabhupada's instructions, Lord Chaitanya's instructions, to that we should always chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, follow four regular principles, associate with the devotees, you know, read the Vaishnava literatures. Because they always remain a fool and always fix those instructions, and they're always meditating upon those instructions, they can write so many, you know, and speak on so many different wonderful aspects of that philosophy by always remaining a fool before the spiritual master and never going beyond those instructions. The point is that if one rejects the process given by the spiritual master in order to, you know, take up one's studies and austerities, and you know, one may practice principles of sannyas or brahmachari life or study of Vedanta or what have you, doing that and rejecting the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, doing that and rejecting associating with Vaishnavas, doing that and rejecting the process of bhakti. In that way, actually, one really becomes befooled by Maya. And we see that anyone who rejects the instruction of the spiritual master, they again become tricked by Maya. They although it may appear sometimes that people become great sannyasis or renunciates or scholars, even within the movement of ISKCON, as soon as they go beyond that position of being a fool before the spiritual master, immediately they're a fool in the lack of Maya. Better to be a fool for Guru than a fool for Maya. That's the point. So, actually, Srila Prabhupada tells a story about his own spiritual master. Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he gave his personal instruction by his own personal pastimes with his spiritual master. Now, of course, although there's not even a trace of pride within Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, but in order to instruct us, in the same way that Lord Chaitanya was instructing us, he was saying, I am the full guru, whatever he was saying, I am the full Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, he said the same thing. He said, because I was proud, right, foolish and proud, three times my spiritual master rejected me when I posed him for initiation. So, because Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the father of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, he said, you go to Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji and you accept him, you ask him if you can, he can be your initiating guru. And of course, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, you know, he was saying that he was thinking that Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji would be very happy to have a disciple who's very learned, the son of great Vaishnava and the magistrate, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Of course, Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji showed no interest at all. And three times he rejected him. And in this way he showed that there is no material qualification. There is no qualification at all except for a sincere desire to serve the guru as his humble servant that allows one to advance in bhakti yoga, bhakti in spiritual advancement. That is the only very strong, sincere and humble desire to serve. Of course, in that example, you can imagine that sometimes we see, actually a devotee came to me about a month ago and described how they had approached a spiritual master and they're trying to like to take initiation and they keep getting rejected. And he said, I'm getting really frustrated, I'm getting angry, like I've done this, I can't understand, like I've served here, I've served there, I can't understand. He said, give me something I can meditate upon. I said, well, meditate upon this, you're a little speck of dust at the lotus feet of the Lord. When you remember that, your mind will be calm again. So he came back to me a couple of days later, he said, thank you. That's what I mean. But otherwise, one might do something very foolish, and being proud of one's qualification, and yet not having the real qualification of humility and sincere desire, one may then reject, give up, or even criticize the bona fide spiritual master. So the Prabhupada said that the real desire, the real qualification, is that one should have a very humble and sincere desire to serve the guru. If one has that, very strong desire that in this lifetime I will see Krishna, I will talk to Krishna in this lifetime, that sort of desire. Very, very powerful. In this lifetime, I will be able to speak to Krishna by the grace of Guru. I will be able to serve Krishna, and get direct experience of serving Krishna and feel that reciprocation in this lifetime. That means that the devotee is prepared to sacrifice everything else for that opportunity. That whatever is unfavorable to that goal, I will reject. Anything. And whatever is favorable, I will accept no matter how difficult. That sort of desire is the qualification. And the humility that apart from that desire, I have no other qualification. I'm completely dependent upon the mercy of the Lord and the Guru to accept. But he was saying, not, you know, Prabhupada said that, you know, that qualification is not the sahaja type of desire. Sahajas also, they have a similar type of desire. That yes, I want to, you know, be with Krishna and I want to associate with the, you know, advanced nitya siddhas and what have you. But they're actually not prepared to give up sense gratification. And the real desire is that one is prepared to give up anything in order to actually achieve the real goal. So it's not the sahaja version of it. And so actually, because one last point here is that, you know, we've spoken here about the how certainly if one remains a humble devotee at the lotus feet of the spiritual master, then their intelligence can act as guru to a degree. You know, because Krishna, as he says, Tesham Sadhu Yuktanam, he actually gives them intelligence within their heart. Because of their sincere service to guru, because of their sincere service to Krishna, Krishna directs their intelligence. The next question is, sometimes people have a misunderstanding of what is guru. That you know, it's quite common to think that you know, there is my initiating guru, apart from that no one else is guru. But you know, this of course, one of the things we learn from the Avadhuta Brahmana is that the devotee should see their spiritual master within every object. And that is also what was taught by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he was pushed by certain godbrothers to take sannyas. He saw that his guru was acting through them. Again, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he one time he was chanting and upstairs, and he heard downstairs there was a big commotion. All the devotees, Hari Bol, there was some celebration. So he went down to see his disciples. What is the occasion? I didn't know that there was some festival. And the disciples explained that there was one particular man who used to come, and when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would speak, he would, you know, be very critical. And, you know, amongst the disciples, he would, you know, say things which were pointing out different faults and what have you. So they were saying, that man, he died today. And when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says what he heard that, he began to cry. He said he was my guru because he taught me humility. And he saw that Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, as his guru, was acting through that man to teach him humility. So one must be very careful of the mentality that I can see one guru in the form of one person. Guru is one that actually acts in a multitude of different ways, even within all the elements of the universe. That is one thing we're learning here. So, again, glancing back, you know, we look at text number 46, it says there that a saintly person, just like fire, sometimes appears in a concealed form and at other times reveals himself. So this is again the mysterious nature of the guru, that one may be actually looking directly at Guru and not be able to see Guru, although Guru is present in an invisible form, invisible to them. Similarly, Queen Kunti, because the ultimate Guru is Krishna, and Queen Kunti prays that although you are everywhere at all times, you are invisible to everyone. Guru, who is Krishna's representative, has that same quality like fire. Now, one may ask, how is it if the real secret of spiritual life is to have that powerful desire to serve the spiritual master, why would Krishna sometimes make the Guru invisible to us, even if we're looking at Guru? There's initiating spiritual masters and many, many instructing Gurus within our society, literally within every temple of ISKCON. Devotees have their initiating Guru, we all take hold of the Shiksha Guru of Srila Prabhupada. And then within every temple, there are those devotees who act as Shiksha Guru. There are many. If we can take, if Krishna is teaching us that we can take a lesson from fire or water, why should we not take a lesson from, senior devotees within our temple? Mm-hmm. I have learned from the tree, but the senior devotee is nothing for me. So in this way, sometimes, in different ways, Guru actually remains invisible. That's what he's saying here. Now, why does that? So this is actually explained by Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji, that for different reasons. One, of course, the nature of those who actually advance in spiritual life is they always consider themselves, they're always in a very humble mood. They don't advertise their qualities, look at me, look at me. In fact, they're saying, don't look at me, I'm the greatest fool. I see you looking at me, please, you'll spoil your day. So therefore, by their own humility, they can, they don't push themselves forward, and therefore they can be invisible to the eyes of others. Another reason is that Krishna himself, he knows that if one serves the bona fide Guru, that Krishna himself becomes indebted. He thinks, this person has served my devotees who are so dear to me that I become indebted to that person. Even that person is rascal number one. He's done some service to my elevated devotees. I become indebted. So Krishna is very hesitant. And so he will test a devotee to see if they actually have a sincere desire. He will test them. If they have that desire, yes, I really, 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 really want to know the absolute truth. I don't just want to make a show of spiritual life. I really, really want to be situated on the absolute platform. Krishna will test. And if he sees that desire is there, he will reveal the Guru. So Krishna reveals the Guru, and then Guru reveals Krishna. They act together. Another reason, of course, is that sometimes the Guru, they don't want to be bothered by insincere disciples, because as we see here in the material world, everyone wants to be the Guru, everyone wants to be the master, everyone wants to be the Guru. No one wants to be the servant and the fool before the Guru. So generally, an insincere disciple, they will search out that Guru which they can control. I want you to help, through my intelligence, because I am the guru. I have mapped out this, plan of enjoyment. I would really like you to bless it. If you don't, I'll be angry. But then, I won't bring so much in my collection. What have you? I won't be giving you a big donation. They want a guru that can control. So, and also, when a guru is surrounded by disciples like that, they can barely perform their own devotional service. Because if you have a lot of foolish disciples, they cause a lot of trouble. Very hard then to actually, for that guru to even perform their own service. Sometimes devotees question, why there are sometimes different offshoots of ISKCON. They're not really offshoots, they're sort of here like that. And sometimes you get a lot of people, go to those sort of offshoot movements. In one sense, they're doing this a favor. Because, the sincere devotees who don't cause trouble, they'll remain in ISKCON. And people who want something, want to be able to control the guru and, in one sense, go on with their material life and make a show of spiritual life, then Krishna gathers them up somewhere else. That way we can chant and dance without such disturbance. But actually, Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji, he tells one story about he saw personally when he was living in Vrindavan that there was this Siddha Baba. And this Siddha Baba, he was perfectly realized in his relationship with the Supreme Lord and his spiritual understanding. So one day some people came and they asked for a blessing. And the Siddha Baba gave them that blessing. There was, someone was ill or something. He gave the blessing, yes, may your child now be, well again. And miraculously, that blessing came true. And of course they went and told some others, go and see the Siddha Baba, get the blessing. So, crowds of people, all of a sudden, everyone's coming, here he is chanting, he's come to Vrindavan to chant the holy names, meditate, and then there daily, there's throngs of people, bless this and bless that, in this way, he thought about it, and he thought this is such a disturbance. So, one time, one of the people came, was very, very wealthy, and he said, I want you to give me, monthly, this amount of money. And so this man, yes, he gave the money. So then that Siddha Baba, he used that money, and he hired, he paid this very young girl, a beautiful girl, to come and daily sweep around his kunja. So then people were coming and they were saying, what is this Siddha Baba? He's got this young beautiful girl, she's sweeping, she's hanging around. Ah, he's a charlatan, he's a cheater. And they all went away. But then no one would come and see him. He's a rascal. He's a fool. There's different stories like that. Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji, one time he understood that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta shows Bhakti Vinodata Kaur was actually coming to cross the river because he wanted to take Babaji initiation. So Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji, he went and he sat on the porch of this lady who was sort of considered to be unchaste and whatever. And he sat there laughing and laughing and laughing because he knew that Bhaktivinoda Kaur would never look for him, in that lady's place. What business has Guru Kishore Das Babaji sitting on this lady's veranda who's known to be unchaste? So he was laughing and laughing and laughing. But in this way, the guru is sometimes like fire by Krishna's arrangement, by their own arrangement, by the humble position of the guru, that they are not always seen, even if one is directly looking at them. And that's another trick of Maya. That's the Boston Shuffle again. So in this way, we can understand from this verse of the Avadhuta Brahmana that Maya is very, very tricky, but if we always remain a fool before the Guru, then we will never be a fool in the lap of the witch called Maya. So any quick questions or comments? Sorry, we'll go to Shukla.